Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very first episode of the Kamidogu podcast for 2022. My name is Christopher Beljanovski, and joining me for another year of antics is the man, the myth, the legend, Toasty.
Toasty!
Thank you so much for joining us for another great episode. I hope that you had a fantastic festive season, and we look forward to bringing you more great content as the year unfolds. Now, if you're new here, welcome, and thank you for joining us. If you've been here for a while and you enjoy our content, I want you to do a favor for us. Firstly, please ensure that you follow or subscribe to us wherever you watch or listen to the podcast, whether it be on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the list goes on. Also, if you could leave us a rating or a review, that would really help too, as it affects the algorithm of each platform and allows us to reach an even larger audience. I know Spotify has just introduced ratings recently, and of course, we also provide our podcast there in video format. So if you could help us out, we'd really appreciate it. Finally, help spread the word by telling a friend. It means so much.
Absolutely, Chris. I couldn't have said it better myself. It would come a long way, guys. It really would. That being said, today is a compelling day. We are honored to be joined by some of the great folk from Eyeballistic Game Studio, the very same group of people who are bringing us the highly anticipated Mortal Kombat Trilogy 4K project. There has been an exceptional amount of material released online already. What has been shown is truly breathtaking. It has left everyone severely impressed, and we are itching for more. Fortunately, we have great news for everyone tuning in today. Today, we have the distinct pleasure of showing you all some new exclusive footage thanks to our kind friends at Eyeballistic. They have also created a Kickstarter campaign with over 22,000 signatures to date. Please go and support this talented crew by signing the petition if you haven't already. We will ensure to attach it to this episode, and it'll greatly help everybody out. Without further ado, we'll now switch over to today's guests. All right. Well, hello, everybody. Great to have you here. We're very excited to talk about this. To begin, why don't you introduce yourselves to our community and share how you first got into Mortal Kombat?
Who should go first?
Definitely you, sir.
Okay. All right. I'm Joe Tresca. I'm CEO of Eyeballistic Game Studio. Got into Mortal Kombat by going to the local pizzeria where it first appeared during my mother's shopping trips. So I used to help her shop. I was like 14 years old. And, you know, I remember reading about it in EGM magazine and seeing actually like the picture of like young Ed Boon and John Tobias, like, and you know, you heard about it and you heard it was gory and violent and all this stuff. And you saw these really cool pictures and like, wow, they're making these actors come to life. But I don't think I was prepared at all. I don't think anybody was prepared for what Mortal Kombat was. And like, then you read about something in a magazine and it's like, oh yeah, sure. That'll probably like show up some, you know, several months down the line in the arcade. But like in a pizzeria, like I was not expecting it. And like that was the place that got it before the actual arcade, which is also in the same mall, which is kind of crazy. Yeah, like I remember I just was completely hooked. Like I saw it and to me, it was like real life. And sure. And I used to watch those movies from like, I don't know, I keep saying USA Up All Night. I don't even know if that's a thing, but it was like this channel you could watch. And like, if you were up really late, I'm like a night owl. I tend to be up till like, you know, 2, 3 a.m. Just that's where I'm most creative. And I remember watching a lot of those kung fu flicks that they'd put up on that station. And Mortal Kombat captured it so perfectly. Even the fact that like the desaturated colors and stuff that the first one had in particular, like pretty much captured like the quality of those movies.
Yeah.
And it just hooked me. Like, I mean, everything, even just the designs of the backgrounds of the stages, like all that stuff just drew me in. And I have to say, like, one of the things that I think a lot of people misunderstand about Mortal Kombat for everybody, right? Like, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, MK was all about the blood and violence and the gore, but for me it was really none of that. Like, I was couldn't get over the characters that are on screen, how they look like they were real people.
Yeah.
Like, that was mind-blowing to me. And then the fact that you had, you know, there was like, it took like a month, but eventually somebody was able to get up to Goro. And when you actually saw Goro and then heard him roar and do all that stuff, like, I just remember, like, that's like a seminal moment in my life. Like, you just like, you never forget, like, this is happening right now. What a time to be alive. Right. Like that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, so that's what Mortal Kombat means to me.
Oh, very good.
Am I going here? Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, go okay. For it.
I'm Justin Slaughter, or like he said, Django, most of the time around the internet. I do music and sound design over at iBallistic. And my introduction to Mortal Kombat was pretty similar, like arcades, if you can remember those things, malls, just going in there and seeing, like, I was always a superhero fan, a big superhero fan. And going in there and hearing, you know, like Steve Ritchie and all the awesome audio going on in the arcades. What is that? Same with Killer Instinct. They were just fighting for attention in there. But I really liked Mortal Kombat's characters in total. Mortal Kombat 2 specifically was what it was that really, really hooked me for the first time. Just so much character in that game. So much mood and cool stuff that I hadn't really seen anywhere else or anything like that. It had its very own vibe, and I liked it, and it was really, really, really cool. These characters were interesting, and so that's kind of what it was for me. I don't remember the year. I was small. I was probably too young, as a lot of us probably were, whenever we started playing those things. But yeah, just after doing that once and playing it, I couldn't play it. I was mashing, and it was awful, and that didn't matter. I didn't care. I was having a blast, and yeah, ever since then, giant Mortal Kombat fan.
Very good.
Yeah, I was actually a bit late being introduced to Mortal Kombat. It was 1997. By the way, my name is Justin McCollum. I forgot to introduce myself. I am the environment designer for iBallistic now. I recently joined the team, so it's really exciting. So, but yeah, it was 1997, and I was about 5.5, 6 years old. I was rather young, and my cousins were playing Mortal Kombat Trilogy on the Nintendo 64, and I was just drawn to. I just walked into the room, and I saw the colors. The colors were incredible of all the different characters on the select screen. That's one thing that drew me to it. I believe it was just a different, diverse character selection as well.
Yes. Like,
none of the characters looked the same. They all had their own unique look and appearance to them. And so that was another thing. And then the backgrounds, obviously, like the Soul Chamber, the temple, the subway, they all had these awesome, vibrant colors. And so that's what drew me to Mortal Kombat, was just the visuals in general. And yeah, I wasn't very good at it either. My cousin would kick my butt at it. But I just loved it. And eventually, it became my graduation present. From kindergarten, and my parents were probably like, what the heck were we thinking when they gave it to me? But looking at it now, it's the best thing that they've ever done. To me, it's the best thing that they've ever done, because Mortal Kombat now for me has changed my life for the better. You know, my passion for it got me recognized by Joe here at iBallistic, and he's helping me with my career now. And I've met a handful of the actors from Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and 3. And I'm very good friends with TabMach99. And he's huge in the Mortal Kombat industry. And because of him, he introduced me to all these connections throughout the Mortal Kombat community. Not just the actors, but fans. People I never thought I'd meet that were on Twitter that I've known for a while. So, yeah, Mortal Kombat, I can proudly say, has changed my life for the better.
Certainly.
Nice. So it's been 25 years since the release of Mortal Kombat Trilogy. But more importantly, why did you choose to ambitiously remaster such a large title as opposed to something smaller like, say, 1, 2, or 3?
So I would say that we tried, and that's the problem.
Yeah, we did.
and so no one knows this pain like Django does. Like, no one knows. Like, and so I'm gonna tell the story, Django.
Please go ahead.
I feel like people need to know how hard you in particular worked when we had the opportunity to pitch this to Ed and the team over there. So,
oh man, we all did.
I mean, I'm calling Django out in particular because here's a guy who his main job was to do the audio. And so I called him in and I was like, dude, you're redoing all the soundtracks. Like, it's going to be just like old times. And we're going to do Mortal Kombat 1, just like we said we were going to do in 2011. I can get back into the story, the genesis of that later on. But basically, to answer your specific question, like, why did we choose Trilogy now as compared to Mortal Kombat 1, 2, or 3, is we tried pitching them twice. And every time it was like, it felt like when we would go through this process, we would kill ourselves to try and get a presentation together or a pitch together or whatever. And it was always like, no one ever said like, hey, you should focus on this one. There was like no guidance. It was kind of like, hey, this stuff you're doing is cool. And we see that you're working on Mortal Kombat 1. And so we just assumed like, okay, so we should probably start with 1. And if they're happy with that, then they'll allow us to do 2 and 3 and so on and so forth, you know, UMK3, whatever. But that particular summer, we were the first time when we were going, we were approaching Ed and everybody over at Warner Brothers. There was this time period where it was the summertime. I remember that. It was like the end of summer where it was like we started early summer, like July. And it was like they were like, okay, you guys can do this. Like, we had a meeting with them, so it became very real. It was like, it was, you know, and again, I can get into the details of that later because it's a long-winded story. But the main thing I want to focus on is that Django was doing like all of the soundtrack and he was just crushing it, and it became very clear that we did not have an actual programmer, and that was a sticking point. And so I went through, they told me, you know, one of the people from WB basically said to me, all right, you guys, well, Ed said it too, like, you guys are lacking development support, but you obviously have the art side down. So let's pair you with a development team that can actually program this. And I was like, yeah, whatever, let's do it. Like, yeah, absolutely. Let's, you know, we don't have, you're right. Like, we're basically a team of artists. You know, I have to mention Gabe Melendez, of course. He's another like crucial part of this team. He's the lead character artist over at iBallistic. And, you know, when you see those pictures and those images of Baraka and Scorpion, that's all his work. And he's just like, he's ridiculously talented.
Brilliant.
But when it came to, like, we need somebody, I kind of freaked out. Like, and Django can probably remember we had, like, I reached out to a bunch of guys. Like, there was that guy from Russia and he was like, I can totally do this. Like, this random dude. And he was like, I can totally do this. And he's like, and I won't charge you anything until I do it. And he's like, give me a week. And I'm like, dude, you're going to need more than a week. And he was like, no, I can do this in a week. And then reaches out to me like, at the end of the week, and he's like, I didn't do anything. I'm quitting game development. He's like, I feel so ashamed. And it was like, and he handed us something. He's like, this is what I have. And it was like, it was bad, right? So, you know, Django to the rescue. He's like, you know, I've been messing with Game Maker for some time now. And anyway, I'm going to let you finish the story because basically Django, I have to say this because he won't say it. He was working like 16, maybe even 18 hour days at the end there, like in a row, not sleeping, not eating, wow. Whatever, just to try and get this thing out to Sean Himmerich because they had asked us for it. So Jag, you got to take over, man. Cause like, I don't want to steal the thunder on this.
No, it's just one of those opportunities where it's like, I sat down and I thought like, if I don't do everything that I possibly can, I'm always going to like regret it if we don't get it. Cause I would feel like I could have done more. And so with that, I was like, listen, I'm not a programmer. I told Cal, I can't do like this position, like completely formally. If we get picked up, if we go to full production, I'm not that guy. I can't program that. But for like a proof of concept or rep demo, I'll see what I can do. I'll try. And I did. And that's one of the ones that's out there now. But I had been messing with it already. And I know, like, if you talk to a programmer and they're like, yeah, give me a week, you get it done. It's like, oh, this guy's never, he has no idea. especially for a fighting game. Like, it's so much goes into it. It doesn't look like it. It's deceptively simple, but it's so much goes into it. And yeah, a number of those guys came and went, and that was fine. I was still working on the other thing. And yeah, I just worked on things so we had something to show. And that last day. The last day. Tell them what happened that last day, Cal.
Is this the where we had the bug with the two player, but we couldn't get two players?
No. Just the end of when they were like, well, they had it. They had a due date or something like that. And the day that they was like, yeah, no, for that version was the finished the demo that I did same day.
That was the same day, right? It was the same day that they basically were like, yeah, this isn't going to work out. And he had literally, he was like, it was like I had that conversation with a representative over at Warner Brothers. And basically, he was like, look, Joe, we ran the P&L on this, you know, the profit and loss on this. It's like, it's just going to be too much, too expensive. It was like north of $3.2 million to do it. And like, I had, I learned a ton about game development, which was so valuable. Like I don't regret anything that we went through. Like, it took me a long time to get over it. I'm not going to lie. Like, yeah. Trying to get over an ex or something, and I'm still not over it really. No. Right. I still pine for her, but you know, like in terms of like what happened, you know, like the learning experience was so awesome because I basically was given the power with WB basically being like, you are granted the power to go out and do an SOW, like a RFP, go out and get a request for proposal from any game studio you can find that you think would be appropriate for this. So I reached out to like 10, and every time that I did that, it was like, I felt like I was the shit because I was like, you know, it's like I flopped my cock up on the table and I'm like, look, I'm like, I got WB behind me right now. And we're going to be doing a Mortal Kombat in HD. And like all these companies were like, hell yeah. And like, you know, they like, a few of them were like, you need to show proof like before we'd even put any effort in it. But then I would show emails, like just screenshots of emails and stuff. And they were like, okay. And like I was getting the treatment that you would get if you were WB. Like I was acting like an arm of WB. It was fun to play that role for a little while. And they made their proposals and they put in like man hours and man months and all this stuff that I had absolutely no concept or clue of. Like I knew a little bit about it because I, as a creative director in advertising, I had to manage some budget stuff. But when it came to game development, it's just another world. And, you know, a lot of times I was just kind of faking it, like acting like I knew what I was doing, which I really didn't have a clue. And you know, it was so cool to see. Like some of the pitches that I did, I was able to see a lot of the behind the scenes of the canceled 2010 remake, and I can talk about some of that stuff later. But yeah, that last day, he like after killing himself for all that, he gets to the point where he's done. And he's like, okay, I'm done. And I forgot if it was like, I think we were using Slack back then. He was like, hey, I'm done. And it was like, I just got off the phone with like WB and they basically were like, it's not going to happen. There was a saving grace though, because we ended up getting a no, and then it was a not right now, but try again next year. And so that was kind of the only light in the tunnel, a light at the end of the tunnel, you might say, was that, you know, basically Sean said to us, like, you guys did a great job. You did everything that we asked you to do. But all I can say is it's not no forever. It's just no right now. Let's talk about it next summer. So I knew at that point that I needed to, all the things that were really kind of barriers to us being able to get the game done. The biggest one, you know, even Ed pointed out, like, you guys don't have any development team. Like, he's a programmer, so that was like the first thing he zeroed in on, was like, you guys need somebody, you need a version of me basically to be on your team. And so I reached out to a whole bunch of programmers, like, pretty much like immediately after that. I let that sink in. Okay, that didn't happen. Let's take a beat and figure out, like, it's not no forever. So we'll come back at it next year. And so by that next, it was like January or February, I found our superstar programmer, Joe Strout, who's been working with us now since that point. He's just ridiculously smart and awesome. And yeah, so that's the story behind that. The timing couldn't have been any crazier.
Well, they also told you that listen, this has been a long time ago. And
it's, I know, I'm trying to remember myself.
What's happening?
I'm listening to see how frank you want to be about all this information, Cal. But I'm just remembering.
We're the NDA, like, it expired like 2 years after.
You know, I just remember that. I thought it was that last day, but it may not have been. But I think it was. Man, you heard that, like, look, if the prototype or the demo isn't in a target engine of the target release, we will accept it. And that was after months of been working on the Game Maker thing. And it's, of course, you're never going to take a Game Maker game to market. That was not
that's
ever
right.
The point.
I forgot about that. But that came from, you know who that came from though? That came from Chris, the money guy. And Chris had a habit of saying, like, he loved to say shit that would just like drive me crazy. Like, me and this guy Chris, we have like a great respect for each other, but we would have screaming matches over stuff. Like, he was a shark, and he worked for WB. He was doing what he needed to do. And I totally respect his perspective. He's trying to make sure that the company makes good decisions and stuff like that. But, there was a lot of, if you've ever seen Shark Tank or anything like that, like, he was literally every chance that he had to like throw me off or like ask me a question that I didn't have an answer to, or just beat on me for not having the answer to said question, that would happen. So, that was really heart-wrenching. But at the same time, like, I kind of had made a little bit of an adversarial relationship with this guy, because, you know, like, us starting out to meet, it was so crazy. I love telling this story, but, like, basically it was the first time I was meeting him, and he was like, hey, he's like, you know, Ed said that I should talk to you. You know, how are you doing? And it was kind of very cordial in the very beginning. And then he's like, and I'm like super excited, right? Because I'm like fanboying out. I'm like, yeah, Ed's really into it, and I'm excited for it too. And I think he had the impression that I was kind of like this fanboy who maybe doesn't understand the business. And he didn't know, like, most people don't know that I had spent, like, you know, at that point, I think it was like 16 or 17 years in advertising. And like, once you've been through what advertising gives you in terms of like having to get nasty with people and mean and dealing with people, like constantly criticizing you or asking you why you did everything, every decision that you've made, it kind of you build a little bit of an armor to it. And you can tell really quickly when somebody is kind of messing with you or kind of just like feeling you out. And one of the first things he said was, I got to be honest with you, I don't think you guys are anything special. Like, that's how he started out. He was like, I don't think you guys are anything special. I think you're like, he's like, I don't know how you convinced Ed to have me talk to you. But, and it was really like I could see the way it was going. And I think I just stopped talking, which for me, that scares people because you can already tell how much I talk. And I was already like mile a minute. And I took that in and I was like, you know what, Chris? I'm like, you know what? Maybe you're wasting my goddamn time. I changed the entire tone of the conversation. I'm like, I don't need to talk to you either. I'm like, obviously, if Ed told you to talk to us, then we must not just be your average everyday, you know, bunch of, you know, gee whiz MK fans. Obviously, we have some talent and he's seen it. I'm like, I'm sorry you can't see it, but, you know, I'm happy to hang up the phone. And he was like, no, but, blah, and like, he was totally stuttering, which was the greatest thing for me. I was like, I'm hanging up, Chris, because I don't really like the way this conversation is going. And then he changed the entire tone of the conversation from that point on, completely changed. He was like, you know what, Joe, we got off on the wrong foot. You're absolutely right. Like, I wouldn't be talking to you. And it was like, he was very complimentary. He's like, whatever you said, maybe you guys are like, you must be like magic. And it was, that's the way it was with him. Every conversation we had was a game. So.
Yeah. It's important to remember that these guys, and we went through quite a few of them with the Warner Brothers Financial. Like, these weren't game developers. This wasn't that part of Warner Brothers. These guys, but probably they probably didn't even play video games. So that wasn't their job. They're there as money people and deciding or just getting the numbers. Not even really deciding a lot of the time, or at least not the only ones. Like, here's all the numbers. There was a very clear feeling, though, that everyone outside of NetherRealm at Warner Brothers didn't care for that to happen. MKHD, yeah. They didn't really want it to happen. They weren't motivated, and they were just kind of like going through the motions to pacify, I don't know, maybe Ed, maybe and Sean, I guess. But they had no desire in really going for it or care. And boy, I don't remember who was who, because we went through so many of those people at WB Financial. But man, like the time where they said, would you guys consider doing it for free, just giving it to us?
It's yeah. Like, that was a really? The producer. He was nice. He was a nice guy. And he was a nice guy. I'm laughing because I remember him saying that to me, and I think it was simultaneously I began chatting it back to the whole team. I was like, holy shit, he just asked if we'd consider doing it for free. And everybody was like, are you fucking kidding me right now with this guy? Like, the way he put it was, Joe, I know you're a passionate guy, and I know that you're just going to continue to work on it, and you're going to come to us with a full game, and then we're just going to say yes. And that was pretty much how, and I was like, that is never going to happen. No. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, we've already put our soul into this, and you guys kind of ripped our hearts out. And absolutely.
Yeah, my parents were questioning that too with me. You know, they always keep an eye on me doing my work and stuff, and they said, why are you working on this for free? I said, well, it's different.
Right.
This is different because Mortal Kombat, I'm very passionate about. I can put time and soul into doing this for free, because to me, Mortal Kombat means the world amen. To me. It's different when you work on Mortal Kombat and something that you're 100%. Passionate about for free.
Definitely.
So, yeah.
I don't know if that answered the question about Trilogy, though. I think the Trilogy thing was just sold really well, right? You get Trilogy?
Yeah, yeah.
So we were like, hey, what if we just do that? Like, Mortal Kombat Trilogy, because it would blow people's minds if they heard that. Like, all of a sudden, Mortal Kombat Trilogy, HD, here's all these characters. And like, listen, this would make so much money if you did it. I'm assuming that was kind of the thinking behind Trilogy specifically.
Yeah, I think you and I talked about it for a little bit before we had decided on anything. And then what really happened was I was messing around with Unreal Engine 5, because we're talking about, you know, as a game studio, we're talking about switching over to Unreal Engine from Unity. I started messing with it. And of course, I love Mortal Kombat. And so, you know, just as an artist, it's just like, for me, it's just like fun. It's like something I would do. There was no goal behind it. I was just like, oh, I want to remake the Combat Tomb. I think that was the first one I did for Mortal Kombat 2. I love that stage. I'm like, okay. I haven't seen it represented any of the new games. And I put it out there, and this guy, Minzy, came like he like lost his mind over it, in a good way. He was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. You are ridiculously talented. And I was like, dude, I'm just messing around with Unreal Engine and I love it, but you know. And he was like, you gotta start a petition. What game are you remaking? Is it Mortal Kombat 2? And I was like, oh, I would have loved to do that, but it was like, those guys are gone, you know, like they're not interested in doing Mortal Kombat 2. And he's like, well, maybe you would want to do Trilogy then. And I was like, well, yeah, maybe. And it was mostly when he asked me the question, it was like because Django and I had been discussing it a few months earlier. It was like, I want to say 4 or 5 months earlier. And I hadn't even touched Unreal Engine at that point. But I was like, yeah, we should repitch it to them now that we're like a legitimate game studio and we actually have, you know, clients and we're in the process of developing games for the consoles and everything. We could like if we came back now, it would be a totally different story. And we were talking about like what I think at one point I feel like you brought this up, Django, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, like so I don't smear you in any way. But I think you said like that Ed like Mortal Kombat Trilogy was Ed's baby or something, or like. And I'm trying to remember where I heard that. Like, that was an important project to him, I think.
I had just
and
heard
so I was
that
like,
it sold
well,
a bunch.
That seems like it makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I just heard, like, from you that Ed had commented before about how much it sold and how much money it made. And that was pretty much
really
the extent of it. Yeah, it did really, really, really well. It wasn't developed by them or anything. It was developed by a team midway in California somewhere back then. But yeah, it just sold really, really, really well. And it's like, hey, just do that. Just do a trilogy and put it out there. Or just say you're going to do it. Or just bring up the idea. It's all HD, whatever, a bunch of characters, make it work. But yeah, that was pretty much the only thing of it. Ed brought up a couple times that it sold really, really well. And that was,
yeah,
that's why
yeah.
I brought it up.
Yeah, and then the other thing that was kind of like fortuitous, I guess you might say, was when Minzy reached out, happened to be October like 3rd or something, right? And I think it's the 11th or the 12th that it was at that time last year, it was the 25-year anniversary of the release of Mortal Kombat Trilogy. And so that was the other thing, was like, I was like, holy shit, like the stars are aligned, like, we could announce this as like the 25 year anniversary of Trilogy. Like everyone talks about how this year is the 30th anniversary of Mortal Kombat, but like here's a reason why we want to honor that, and you know we wouldn't obviously be starting it until this year anyway. And then you know at the same time we can build some buzz around the fact that in 25 years there's never. It's really hard to play this game. Like, it's really difficult. That's the other thing, too. Like, I wanted to play it. Like, I wanted to get away. I don't have a PlayStation 1. I don't even have my PlayStation 3, like, fat edition or whatever you call it, the one that has the ability to play the older discs. And so, like, if you try to get it on the PC, I don't know if you guys have ever tried getting it. It's like, you can't play the sound. It's, like, all messed up. And there's all these things you have to do. You can get it to play. I'm sure there's plenty of people that have gotten it to work. But it's like, who wants to go through all that? And then now we have this, you know, iBallistic has developed this really, you know, here, I'm going to put my salesman hat on now. But we developed this incredible NetFrame rollback tech that now works on the back of Epic Online Services, which is the same backbone of Fortnite. And it's legit. Like we've been able to give it run it through its paces. You know, the game we're working on now has been tested like by a team of like 20 or 30 people just beating on it, trying to break it. And it is, I'm not going to say it's like, oh, it's the greatest thing in the world, but it's probably going to need work continually to be that good, but it's a really solid, the bones are there. We can do online play and we feel pretty confident about it. And like that game in particular, Mortal Kombat Trilogy, it just lends itself. Like you see all these remakes, the Mugen, like there's a million versions of Mugen and Mugen is really just what like everybody's dream of Mortal Kombat Trilogy, like extended could be. And it's so strange to me that Warner Brothers has never tapped into that and been like, we should be kind of making money off of that. Like, there's a legit huge amount of people that just love Mugen games, and like, there's millions of Mugen remakes and stuff out there. They're just absurd.
They don't
like,
know what you know, that is. They don't.
They don't. They don't. I feel like they no don't know. They're like completely blinded to it, right?
I mean, is Mugen still a? I mean, are there still remakes being made out there right now? I mean, I thought that most of the Mugen remakes were made before, like during the Midway days, before they were bought out by Warner Brothers.
I thought
thing in the past.
No, I mean, it is, but it's still there's a lot of people that are still using Mugen, actually. There's a pretty big community. And you'll see every once in a while they'll release new Mugens, versions of Mortal Kombat. Like, I can't remember them all, but there's this guy. I'm gonna give a shout out to my boy Headlock Gaming. Who over at Facebook, the Facebook has their own like streaming platform, and he literally goes through every Mugen build he can find and just plays and streams it like all day. And anyway, so shout out to him. He's awesome, really good guy. And that's how I know. Otherwise, I would really probably I'd be like the same thing you're thinking, Justin. Like that those things aren't really happening anymore, but there is still like a pretty decently sized community around like making Mugen versions of Mortal Kombat.
a lot of the fans.
Cool. I mean, I'm all for it. So
yeah, a lot of the fans were disappointed when Midway's Mortal Kombat Arcade Collection HD was canceled. Was this in part where the idea and desire at all came to create such a concept, or?
Yeah. Okay. So we'll talk about that. So really interesting story. So a lot of people get this wrong. So just to set the record straight, because it's all out there. Other Ocean was the company that was tapped to do the remake. They were the programming arm of this remake that I think the genesis of it was like in 2009, and they actually went into production by 2010. And then what happened was they knew they needed some help to make this, bring this to light, because they were going to, at the time, and I'm sure you've seen the leaked photos, they were going to actually bring in real actors, not 3D actors. And they were going to film them on blue screen or green screen or whatever, and all in HD. And they used IM 8-bit, who actually did all of the characters. They brought got the actors in, got the studio time. They actually didn't. IM 8-bit was pissed off because they spent some money out of pocket and they were never actually reimbursed. And this is all like, you didn't hear it from me, but you did just now. But anyway, moral of the story is it happened. I'm not going to say who was involved or whatever, but they were really like angry enough where they were like, we will never work with like anybody involved in this ever again. The other group was Virtuous, and Virtuous is kind of like this much, much bigger, like they call them a dev support studio, which is a thing that I had to learn about. It's a way that a company like iBallistic actually would totally be a dev support studio. Like I try to get contracts like that whenever possible. Basically what a dev support studio is like companies come to you and they're like, hey, we need like 10 artists and 3 animators to do this game, and we don't have those people on staff. We've got programmers, we've got whatever, everything else we need, producers, but we don't have on staff the art team that we need to make this vision, you know, this game come to light. Can you provide that to us? And a team like Virtuous has people all over the world, and they have artists in areas where the price per like to create a character would be like 1/10 of the cost it would be to have somebody in America produce the same kind of works. Just sadly, that's just the way it is. That's what they specialize in. When I was one of the companies, I happened to be pitching with my HD remake. Well, in both cases, I ended up crossing paths with Other Ocean, And they were so cool. Other Ocean, Mike Micah, another shout out. Love Mike Micah. He's one of my buddies now. We became friends. Like, basically, he was the coolest guy. He's the studio head of, used to be formerly Digital Eclipse. And you guys would know them from the remakes and stuff that they've done. They were the ones that did the Arcade Collection, as far as I know. Arcade
Collection, that's what it was called. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, okay. They did that. And they also did... actually, I have it here. You can't really see it, but the Arcade 1-Up. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Arcade 1-Up, like the home Mortal Kombat that you can get. That their emulation. Yeah. Oh, there. Yeah. There you go. Right behind you. It's all. You can see that in behind you. It's in the background of the of. When you first start up Mortal Kombat, in the lower right or something, it'll say like either Other Ocean or Digital Eclipse. I can't remember which one, but it's their emulation code that is being used in that. And they were responsible for, I don't know if you guys had a PSP back in the day, but there was like the Midway Arcade Treasures, which had like a really awesome emulation of Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and 3, which I love that. I wish I could get it again, but it was so cool. It was like perfect. So they did that, and so that's why they were reached out to by Ed and the team to do the original, 2010 remake, because they had a past together. They had done some awesome emulation work, and it just made sense that they'd be the team that they would tap for that. And so what ended up happening with this is there's a few things that I want to say. So like number one. Having seen some stuff that other people haven't seen, like stuff that was just for my eyes only through Other Ocean when they did their presentation to me, because I happened to get lucky. Like, I didn't know, like, how would I know that Digital Eclipse would go out of business and then become Other Ocean and that they were attached to the project? Like, it was just dumb luck that I happened to reach out to them as one of the companies that that I, was going to ask for help, programming help, for when we approached them in 2016. And so Mike Micah was like, oh my gosh, like, I've got stories to tell you. And like, he had so many awesome stories to tell me. He was like, first of all, he spent a ton of time with me. He was like, one of the challenges is that Mortal Kombat runs at 54.3 frames per second on a CRT monitor. And now you're trying to translate that to like the home, flat screen TV, and it has to run at 60 hertz. And so how do you make up those extra frames without changing the frame rate and all that stuff? And so it was that he was talking about. He was talking about like how Ed was really unhappy with the way Raiden's costume looked. And I Am 8-Bit was like, whoa, we did the best we could. Like, we couldn't get all the costumes. Like, and there was this seam that was that was the seam. Whenever we were talking about this, there was a seam that was like really just annoying Ed about that. It didn't look right. It didn't look the way like Raiden's outfit was supposed to look. And so he made them go in and like hand paint out every single frame of animation. And they were like, fine, we'll do it. And they were just pissed off because he like canceled it right after that. Like, he was like, still not doing it. But the main reason, and this is really in defense of Ed and Sean and having seen it now too through Other Ocean, because they showed me it. It looked like your aunt and uncle got dressed up to go to a costume party, and it just was over the top. It was awful. Like, it was really bad. Like, and I don't blame Ed, and I'm really, he made the right decision to kill it. Like, it needed to die. And I think the part that kills everybody is that it could have been cool, but like, you didn't know that it was going to look so bad until you did it, like until you shot all those people. And then once you had them on there, because the lack of frames, there's just a lack of frames of animation. It just looks really bad. It looks really corny. And then now the other side of it is that I got to witness, and this is again, complete luck. I happened to reach out to Virtuous. This was completely by accident. And they were like, oh, one of the reasons we took your call is because we worked on the 2010 version. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I was just talking to Other Ocean. And they told, like, and he's like, yeah, it was us. And they gave me, like, the whole story, right? We got the whole thing. And they basically said, Yeah, we worked on it, and they were like, here's some screenshots we're going to show you. Like, you know, don't show these to anybody else. And what they do is they have this team out in Brazil, I want to say. Maybe that's wrong, but their whole thing is that they hand paint all the textures that they do. They're like super awesome artists, like amazing artists, right? But what they did is they applied this hand-painted texture look to these 3D created objects. And Justin McCollum, you're gonna appreciate this because, you know, as an environment artist, the photographic look was completely gone. Like it looked like a painting, like concept art painting.
Yeah, it's kind of stylized.
It was super stylized. It looked like something you would expect to see, like, wow, in the background of Street Fighter. It was very cartoony. There was even like black lined edges around all of the elements. And this was the stuff they showed me, a lot of stuff from Mortal Kombat 1, which nobody has seen. Like they showed the palace gates. They showed the shrine, and it was like the throne. No, they didn't show the throne room. And I was like, I remember, because I've seen some of the screenshots, the throne room looked awesome. Wasteland, if you've seen some of those shots, looked awesome. There was just the work that they gave looked so completely different than the stuff that another team clearly that they had reached out to independently to do. And so I was like, how would this ever work? Like, there's no way this could all mixed together. Like this, it's like one completely different art style from Mortal Kombat 1 because it looks like it's all hand painted. And then you got this other stuff that looks right. Like that's the way I would have approached it. It was more photorealistic. And anyway, I've been waiting, I feel like, forever to just tell anybody this outside of my own, like, because it's like, it was bad in my opinion. I didn't like it. And you know, I think they would have regretted releasing it. But go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I think one of the things that John Tobias doesn't get enough credit for is editing those sprites back in the arcade days, like himself. It wasn't just taking shots of people and like dumping them in the game.
I mean, especially
he
in the
90s. Painted over all of those things. Yeah. And
yeah, exactly.
And because of that, because of all the work he did in post touching up that stuff is what gave it that gelled look that everything fits together so well. And that's why I don't know if there's another digital actors game that really looks as good as Mortal Kombat or anywhere near as good as Mortal Kombat. Like, it just fits really well. And that's John Tobias. And obviously, if you're going to jump over to HD and you have all this extra definition all of a sudden, you're going to be able to see everything. And it's so much harder to make things feel as unified and have that same art style flow all the way through it, unless you are going in and editing every frame. And now these frames are huge because it's HD and all this other stuff. So, that project, just from that perspective, after I heard about all that, I was like, yeah, that sounds like way too hard to do for anything. That direction, the digitized actor direction. Yeah, I don't blame them for not going through that. That would be crazy.
Yeah, 100%.
It's a shame. Because I do remember Daniel Piscinas.
Oh. No, go ahead, Justin.
Oh, no. I was just saying it's a shame because I remember Daniel Piscina telling me that Tony Marquez's son actually played
was it really? That's cool.
That wow.
Yeah, it was his son, which is so crazy because he looks like so much like his dad.
Instagram,
and it was
too.
Like perfect. Yeah, it was such a good fit. He was the only one though, if you ask me, that looked that like looked right big in time. The costume. Like he could pull it off, you know.
As I was saying, before we continue, let's now take a look at some of the media you've released publicly. So first up, we have side-by-side comparisons of Baraka. We have Classic Sub-Zero, Cyrax, Sektor, and Shiva. The detail on your character models is absolutely incredible, I just got to say. Wow.
Hell yeah.
I'll pass that along to Gabe. He's and also one of the other kind of new additions to Ibalistic is Samsk is his Twitter name. But Lemus 90, I think it is the other name that he goes by. He's the one who produced the Cyrax and Sektor. And I remember, and he basically came to me and, I came to him and I was like, dude, your stuff is awesome. I would love to have you join the team. And I showed some of his stuff to Gabe, our lead guy. And Gabe was like, yeah, he's got legit skill. Like we've got to bring him in. And, I happy. I've shared some of that stuff in the MK channel, but I haven't shared it all. I'll do it now. You'll see it in the Discord, in a second, but, yeah, I mean, his stuff is really good. Like check that out when you get a chance, if you can open that up. Baraka, Gabe put a lot of extra attention and love into because he hadn't been, you know, same thing with Scorpion too. Like Scorpion hasn't gone through this process that Baraka has, but Baraka, Gabe put extra attention into recently because of the exposure that we've been getting with this project. He was like, oh, I better like really step it up. And also I'm sure there's a bit of a competition there now that we have another awesome character artist involved. So it's just friendly, but yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
So moving on, we've also got a sample of the versus screen, as well as models in some screenshots for Rain, Scorpion, Goro, and Raiden in arenas such as the Subway, Portal, Combat Tomb, Church, and Deadpool. The game's looking absolutely fantastic. I know every time you guys drop a screenshot or a video, you know, social media lights up, and you know, even if I'm not at my computer, my phone's going nuts and I have to jump in and check what's going on. So yeah, absolutely love the progression, seeing the progression and also seeing those shots come out. It's been absolutely fantastic. And a huge thank you to the team at Ibalistic because we can actually provide an exclusive first look at the balcony rendered in full 4K resolution. So why don't you tell us a bit about this arena?
Yeah, so that one is even a surprise to Justin, probably to both Justins actually. I had been working on. That. I think I might have shared a little bit in.
I mean, I saw.
I started. I mean, I think
me
you
some
knew,
progress
we talked about it,
on
but,
it, but I've never actually seen the final result. So that's exciting.
Yeah. So I finally finished it up just before we got together here, and. That's my favorite stage. Actually, like one of my favorite stages, and it's like I was not a huge Mortal Kombat 3 fan. Like it took me a while to get into it. I remember seeing it in the arcade, and I generally kind of ignored it. But that soundtrack that Dan Forden did for that, like, and I know you'll appreciate this, Django. But like that particular song that plays in the background, like it just stuck in my head, and I was like, this is epic. Like this is Mortal Kombat. This is what. And I remember when PlayStation 1 came out, it was like, it came out and then it was like 3 months later, I think, or maybe a month later, it was like October, it was like September, PlayStation 1 came out, and then like October, Mortal Kombat 3 came out, and it was pretty much like almost arcade perfect. And I just remember I was so excited about, like, I just need to hear that soundtrack again, I need to be on that stage, like with all the candles and stuff. I just thought it was the coolest thing. And, the other one that I like, which also has that soundtrack, is out there too, the Pit 3. And it was something I just needed to do. So that's basically the impetus behind that one.
Yeah, you certainly nailed that one. You've been working on this project for some years now. As it stands, how much have you actually put together in terms of, you know, arenas, combatants, music, etc.? And do you have anything that's actually playable in your hands?
No, there's nothing playable, yet. And I
from
yet
this group
because,
that we're showing off, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's been so long. It depends on what you're talking about. We have done playable
stuff. Yeah, the older stuff is playable for sure. Like MK1. Yeah, and like there's a version Django had mentioned. There's a version out there that he slaved away on in Game Maker. And then later on, we released, a year following, we released the Unity version of the game that had been floating around. You can find that on the internets. That outside of that, we pretty much have shifted our development focus to stuff that gets us actually paid instead of that's debatable also, but there's a chance to get paid for the stuff that we do today, and you know, everything's milestone based in game development, so that's why we laugh, because you can be slaving away for months at a time and not see any payment until the publisher decides to approve you and then pay you for that milestone. And so, as you might imagine, that can create some situations where people aren't paid for a long time, and like they need to pay rent payments and stuff like that. And so Justin and I have been like living that life for like years now.
I feel like it's becoming a therapy session tonight.
I feel like, tell me more about it. Totally. Anyway, to answer your question, the stuff from Trilogy is not yet playable because we have taken sort of a stand where we're not going to allow ourselves to be taken advantage of again. We're not going to be the team. We've like said that we're not going to be the team that's going to be like, oh yeah, we will just do this for free and it'll be nothing.
Yeah.
Like we're doing the stuff we're doing now is valuable and would all be added to the game. And it's part of the pitch deck to sell to Warner Brothers that we obviously have the capability to do this and that we can do it at a high quality. Without the screenshots, obviously, like everything that we probably wouldn't be talking, right? There wouldn't be 22,000 plus people who would have signed the thing. It's a form of marketing, and that's why we do it. You know, I don't want to speak for you, Justin, because I know you're doing it for your own reasons for sure. But certainly the reason I'm doing this whole thing is just because I love Mortal Kombat. It's stuff I was going to do. I would have done this anyway. I'm getting a lot of experience playing with Unreal Engine 5, which I know I'm going to use like for business one way or the other, whether or not this project goes through or not. So to me, it's not a loss. If they say no, it's not going to work out. I'm not going to cry about it because, you know, that's the most likely scenario, right? Since based on the past. That's the reason there's nothing playable yet.
No, I agree with you, Joe. I 100% agree with you. I mean, I'm doing it wholeheartedly because I love Mortal Kombat most of all. And it's just something I'm very passionate about. And I've worked on Mortal Kombat projects in the past, too. So it's nothing new to me. And I'm also doing it for my portfolio and to just build that up and to just gain some experience doing that with you guys. So... I think that it's always been
kind of passion driven. I mean, you could probably hear it in our voices when we talk about Mortal Kombat and what's meant to us. But you know, Django, what's your reason for being involved in the show?
I was just going to say that this stuff, it's important to keep in mind that like the stuff you're seeing hasn't gone through as much, polish and work and detail touch up as something like a Target release would, because
that's for sure.
Yeah, we're not getting paid for it, so we can't like devote studio time to making stuff that looks like and it could be a release market ready product. If we did, all of this stuff would go through way much work. It'd look even better than a lot of it already does. It could just get all that polish that goes along with that. And hopefully, like, this is more like of a tease of what it could be, or just playing around with it if it doesn't go anywhere. Because, like Cal said, we are Mortal Kombat fans. I've done probably the least on the team. Well, maybe as far as this goes, this Mortal Kombat trilogy, unless I'm forgetting things, which is very possible. I'm not sure, but the last time I did any music for it or something like that was for this specific Mortal Kombat trilogy thing.
Yeah, it's been a little while since you've done like MK3 tracks or anything like that. As far as I know,
I need to. I should do that balcony.
Yeah, oh, that would be amazing. Yeah, I should do that. My favorite.
I really want to hear it too. I'm a huge fan of your music. About music. I actually listen to it when I do my gritty stuff, just to kind of
because we're talking about
you know.
I'm sorry.
Motivate myself. It's really really awesome your work. Oh no! I was just saying I'm a huge fan of Django's music. I actually listened to. I was just telling these guys earlier that I listen to a lot of remixes and stuff from fans more so than I actually do the soundtrack.
Oh, thanks, man.
So, but no, I mean, awesome. I mean, Django's music is absolutely incredible. It's just insane.
Now we're gonna make him blush. We can't see it, but he's as red as the shirt.
I am.
But it's funny because there's always a part in my presentation when I'm like pitching for work in general, like to try and get Eyeballistic new deals or new games. And I always get to Justin's work and I'm like, okay, so he's a musician and he's a composer and he can do all this stuff and he's got like his own studio and he knows Pro Tools like in and out. And you know, and I'm like, this is a guy who, like, I remember the first time I heard Goro's Lair and I remember I was like, oh man, that's so badass. Like, it's got like a guitar in there. Like, where'd you get the guitar from? And he's like, dude, I play the guitar. And I'm like, you gotta be shitting me. Like, he's got, this guy's like, how do we land on this level of talent? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just boggles the mind. Like,
okay. You know. Thank you. I'm glad that you guys anyway. Did it. But no, that it's Mortal Kombat that brings that. Like, it brings that out in everybody on the team, I think.
Well, to the credit of the team, everyone is hugely talented, I think.
Absolutely.
Like, from the music to, you know, your work behind the scenes, Joe, to the environments, to the character models, everything is just like, you've got such an incredible team behind you. I cannot see this going away without a whole lot of uproar. You know, it's incredible.
Oh, exactly.
I really like that intro you guys have for your podcast too. That's a good tune.
We were talking about that. I was like, I think that's Django's friend. Yeah.
From the limited videos you've released, it really looks like you're making incredible use of the Unreal Engine 5, from flowing fabrics to realistic surface lighting capabilities. How challenging has it been to sculpt detailed character models and arenas in 3D? Considering by today's standards, the quality of the original isn't exactly that great.
Yeah, I'm gonna let you like just take the ball with this and roll on it, because this is your field, my friend.
Okay. All right. Yeah. It's taken some getting used to. I mean, I'm still learning a lot of new tips and tricks. Even with Joe, he's taught me a lot of things. I mean, with the Soul Chamber, this is the most intricate sculpt that I've done yet for an arena, because it has to be exact, because this arena is so beloved by so many people, and it's got to be perfect. It's got to be spot on to the original. So I'm taking my time with this. It can take a single sculpt. Well, for me, with the temple, I was dealing with some health issues and things like that, so it took me longer than I should have, but a single sculpt can take weeks sometimes for me, because it's especially if it has to be picture perfect to what it was in the original. So there's different brushes that you use in ZBrush as well that you have to play around. You can't just use the same brush. You have to use different brushes, like this, like what would ZBrush is called, standard brush, and then there's a clay buildup, and then there's Damien standard. I mean, there's all kinds of different kinds of technical stuff. But anyway, Yeah, there's a lot of tips and tricks that go into sculpting these things. And I was just recently using the original backgrounds as image planes. You have to put that into ZBrush and sculpt on top of it in order for it to be more realistic and accurate. So you have to actually build on top of the original shots of the arenas in order for you to really get an accurate representation in your 3D model to make it look the way it did in the original games from the 90s. So there's a lot of tips and techniques that go into this thing.
Did something just freeze?
Potentially, yeah. I think so.
Yeah,
he's having some internet connection issues, it looks like.
Yeah.
I'll pick up where he left off. But basically, what he was saying is that you have the he takes the image plane and he puts it in the background, and then he sculpts on top of it with like a transparent sort of overlay, like the 3D model is transparent so that you can sculpt on top. Yeah, we lost him. And what happens is you try to get all the details that you possibly can, and I think it's hard because we're trying to upscale a lot of this stuff, and it's very difficult to get it to the quality that what the fans expect. Looking at Justin's work, what really blew me away was the level of detail that he put into the subway. And then we collaborated a little bit. I mean, he did like 95% of it or probably 99%, I'll say, of the temple stage, I guess it's called. And that stage to me is probably, I won't even say probably, that is the best stage out of all the ones that that we did. Like it's just the level of detail and how much love he put into every little detail in that. I mean, you can see like everything from, yeah, you just crushed it.
That was my favorite stage growing up. So that's why I put so much time and effort into that one, because that was my favorite. That was a standout for me. I think because I love Mortal Kombat 3 so much is the reason why I've only done Mortal Kombat 3 arenas so far.
Yeah. So that stage, and now I know that level of detail like is being applied to the Soul Chamber, and so fans are in for a treat because it's going to be, that's the thing, because we're so passionate about this. And this was actually one of the things I said to Ed when we had our conversation on multiple occasions, was that like you guys could pay any art group or team to do this and it would just be another gig for them. But if you pay us, we're going to do it. This was back in 2016 when I was kind of fresh faced and doe eyed or whatever you want to call it, like not a clue about how the actual industry works. And, I was like, we're going to put 1,000% effort, whatever that is, like more than 100% of our effort to make this work. And I felt very confident to say that because it's just the reality. It's like we're fans first, and then where we happen to have these skills and abilities. And it's just Ed at one point said to me, and it's something that I never forgot, like there were a few things he said, but one of the things he said was, if we do this, we have to make sure that Joe doesn't lose his shirt, which I always found to be a very odd thing to say. But he was basically trying to protect me from the get-go, knowing that I didn't know what the games industry was like and how he knew we were going to get chewed up and spit out, I think, at the end of the day. And the other thing he said is, if we do this, it has to be you guys and your team, because you understand and love Mortal Kombat like only maybe we would, right? Like that's the only other, like it has to be a team like you who pulls this off, because you get it, you understand Mortal Kombat and you love it. So
with regards to audio, you've mentioned that you're looking to update all music tracks to sound more cinematic, if you will. Will these be paired with classic sound effects, or will these be replaced too?
It's all you, Django.
For the trilogy stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't actually thought about it. What we did before was I would take all the sound effects that I could get from the original one. And I would layer them with new bits of sound as well, sound design on top of it. So you're hearing both the things at the same time. So your ear picks up a little bit of like, oh, that sounds new or sweeter or something like that. That doesn't sound like the arcade. But you also hear the other sound, which triggers the nostalgia in it too. So you kind of get the mix of both there. And that's probably the same approach that I would use if we were doing like a full production for a Mortal Kombat trilogy. I found that to be the best solution for me personally.
So you're currently running a petition over on change.org with a goal of, I believe, 100,000 signatures, and you're fast approaching a quarter of that. Considering the excitement around this project within the community, how confident are you in the end that it will become a reality?
You know, I think it's probably a coin flip. You know, I can say that I feel confident that I know what Ibalistic is capable of. At this point, it's like we've been through the trenches. We've done, there's literally nothing we can't do. Like we anybody who naysays us would be kind of dumb at this point. Like there's just, we have the online tech that I mentioned briefly with you before. We have, you know, we have the fighting game experience that few other developers can say that they have. Some of it from us carried over from just being fans of the games, but fighting games in general, like Django, I know you mentioned Killer Instinct. I'm a huge Killer Instinct fan. You know, everybody on the team really is excited about fighting games in general. And then you pair that with, so you have like, we have the skill, the talent, we have this very unique ability to make fighting games as a studio. You could probably count on maybe 10 fingers if you're lucky, without having to include toes, on like the number of game studios that are capable of making a fighting game, no less, like a good fighting game, no less a game like Mortal Kombat. And one of the things that we have in addition to that is I have, of course, contacts with Ed and Sean over at NetherRealm, and then I have a whole bunch of contacts with folks over at Warner Brothers. I would say that to some degree, those guys are all kind of like, even when I was like, okay, well, I guess this is goodbye, you know, they were like, yeah, it's not like, we'll be talking again. Like it was pretty much understood that, like, you know, we were, I was told by one of the producers at Warner Brothers when we first did it, the second time we around when we pitched them, and he basically said, we get 1,000 pitches a year at Warner Brothers, and your pitch is being put in the top five, and then eventually they actually greenlit it for about a week, and then, or maybe 2 weeks, and then they abruptly canceled it and said, we're going to move on and have somebody else do it, which I think ended up being Blind Squirrel. I can't promise that they are going to say yes. I think what I know now from also having friends in the industry, like I mentioned Mike Micah, I kind of follow his lead when it comes to the Marvel versus Capcom remake. I don't know if you guys know about that, Free MVC 2. It's all over sort of the internet, especially Twitter. And so we've been involved in helping pitch that to Disney and Capcom. And so and one of the things that Mike always says is, if the fans want this, the best thing that they can do is show that in some quantifiable way. And that's why I wasn't my idea. Like the petition was not my idea. That was Minzy, all him. He came up with the idea. And as time went on, I was like, this is brilliant, because everybody who signs up to this is, we have like access to everybody's emails now, and we can send out information, and we can be like, hey, you know, like if we need to there's a lot of curveballs that can be thrown at us by Warner Brothers. I doubt that they're going to. I think it would be dumb. I'm going to say that out loud. I think that it would be dumb for them to just outright, after 22,000 people have signed it, just be like, no. It would be the worst PR move that they could ever possibly make. And I think they know that. So they're going to have to be, so I think they're going to have to be careful about how they say no, if that's their intention. And so my goal is to really make this, an offer that, you know, an offer they can't refuse, right? It's got to be, you know, it's like, I'm just saying, like, there's definitely this, I'm not saying like threaten them or anything like that, but the fact that we have the power of the sort of the Mortal Kombat community behind us is huge. It's not a small thing, and it's not something we take for granted. And I think that that is going to make make a difference in getting us further in the process. I can't say if they're going to say yes. I think what really comes down to is money. At the end of the day, it comes down to money, and it's in one case, if it's going to potentially cannibalize their sales of whatever it is they're trying to release for the 30th anniversary, if there is such a thing, then it's going to be a no. And even if it were a no, it might probably be like a not this year, but let's talk next year kind of situation. And if it's not that, then it's like, okay, how much is this going to cost? And I think I have a really good answer to that. I think that we would end up doing some kind of Kickstarter or crowdfunding, because now I see that people would honestly, like, I can't tell you how many people are like, take my money. Like, I don't know if that would be a reality, you know, if like we were like, okay, guys, we just need to make, you know, I could see them saying like, let's set a goal for like, all right, you say there's a lot of people out there that want this. Set a goal for $300,000 that'll get you kickstarted on your ability to actually pay your guys and start making this a project. And really all I'm asking for, I mean, you know, I feel like I'm pitching you guys now at this point, but like all I'm asking for from Warner Brothers is like, don't shut us down. Like, you know me, you've dealt with me, we've talked like at every level. I've talked to all the Warner Brothers executives. I'm not some stranger off the street at this point. You're like, oh, it's Joe. We know that guy, right? So, like,
absolutely.
Let me come do my thing. And instead of saying it's going to be too expensive or you don't have enough experience, let the community, first of all, that's not true anymore. We have the experience. And the part of it being too expensive shouldn't be a problem anymore, because we could crowdfund. We could crowdfund this to like $300,000, $350,000. Yeah. And that would get us set to where we need to go. And then all I would be like is just give us the rest of the money we need if we can reach that goal, and we'll make it happen. And I can't see like – it would just be like, why would you say no to that? Like, why, you know? So – but, you know, if it's Warner Brothers, they could find a way, right?
Yeah, they could find a way. That's the question. We're
I think that's what Jago is waiting to say.
Yeah, you can see why Mike Cal's the guy for the job. He's such a – man, if it was me in that position, I would have given up forever ago, but he doesn't say cool. the gamble there is Warner Brothers. Whether or not that it ever comes to fruition or anything happens to it, it's you're not betting on us. It's not a gamble with us. Hell yeah, we'd be doing it. It's on Warner Brothers. They're going to do, they don't even know. They don't know. No. Because they told us that time that someone over there was like, hey, why don't we just do ports of Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and 3, the arcade ones, and just release it that way, direct ports. It's like, you did that 2 years ago called the Arcade Collection. Do you not even know what the hell
they
you guys
don't
are
know
doing?
Their
they
own
don't
stuff.
Know what they're
yeah.
doing. They have no idea.
Yeah.
No, so it's really hard to have faith in Warner Brothers. And us, though, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, we know we talk about this all the time.
Yeah.
Like, we know we can do this, and not only if we do it, we're gonna do it. Like, it's gonna be awesome. You know what I mean? So
most definitely. Well, we will most definitely make sure to include the link to the petition in our show notes for this episode, so make sure to check that out, guys. We are now going to jump over to some user submissions. Some questions that have been sent in. First one up is Dave Savage 1982, and also Beto underscore MK underscore Dubin underscore MX asks, will there be any hidden surprises that the original does not have? For instance, characters, game modes, moves, the ability to change skins or customize attires, etc.
Yeah, so I'm going to put on my production hat. And so, first of all, like, if they say yes to us, the first thing I'll do is probably cry like a baby in the corner of the room in happiness, right? And then I'll be like, oh my God, they said yes. So it's like the worst thing, like okay, now we've got to figure out how to do it, which we can. We know we can do it. But, you know, there's always like that, okay, now you've succeeded, now what? And then I think, okay, so if you were to ask me in 2016 when I was first getting into this, I would have said, oh yeah, it's going to have everything. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be the best ever. But now that I know how publishers can be, well, I'm not going to name any names, Django, but we know publishers that will sit there and like they'll be like, no, this milestone's not good enough. This milestone's not good enough. You got to do this. You got to do that. Fix this. Fix that. And then they'll finally pay you. Or, hey, if you don't hit your deadline, like, we're going to get you. You got it. But you got to get this done in 6 months. Get cracking. I can't promise that we're going to be adding extras in that case, right? Especially if the contract that they're willing to sign is like, it has to be done by Christmas or we don't give you your money or whatever it is, like, you know, like that kind of thing. If, however, they're like, take as long as you need, you know, obviously within reason, you know, what we'll do is we'll announce it this year and we'll say it's coming, you know, 2023 or whatever. That gives us the opportunity, the opening to add a lot of cool stuff. And some of the cool stuff that I've been thinking about and that we've been talking about is certainly making sure that we clean up some of the fatalities where the screen turns black and you're like, what happened? Like a lot of people have been asking about what happened, and we would want to talk to Ed and even possibly like if I have not had a chance to meet at John Tobias, which is like, I need to do that's on my bucket list. I need to like, I know so many people who know him. So it's like, I could get an introduction, but I don't want to be like weird about it. I just want it to be like normal. And so, you know, like I had an awesome conversation with Dan Piscina, and he like called my cell phone and he was like, hey, and we were talking and I'm like, I was telling Dan, like, I am talking to Dan Piscina. Like, I'm like, this is blowing my mind right now. And he's like, he's like the coolest guy too. He's like such a cool guy. And, you know, cause we're involving him potentially, hopefully in one of the projects we're working on now. And so he was like, oh, this could be a great opportunity. You know, I have a big fan base and a following, and I'm like, yeah, you do. Like, I believe me, I know. All this to say that I think that some of the other stuff we'd want to add would be the ability to have both chameleons in the game, right? Like, I think that's kind of a given. I think that we would want to – some extras and things that we'd want to add, that these wouldn't necessarily be secrets, but these would be things that you could get in this game that you wouldn't be able to get in the original. The ability to swap out life bars, like if you want an MK1 style life bar, an MK2 style life bar, an MK3 style life bar, you can have whatever you want. You can choose that. Another thing that makes a lot of sense is, you know, there were a bunch of Mortal Kombat 1 stages that were missing. Like, that needs to get fixed. Mm. I you know, the original game, you could choose, what is it, like two different versions of Jax, I think, two different versions of Kung Lao, Raiden, Kano,
yeah,
and I think that was it. Like, we should do the Sonya, and like, we got to finish that out, right? Like, you should have the ability to get MK1 Liu Kang in there and all that stuff. So like, I think then that also progresses into, okay, now we're targeting getting like every asset, like a true trilogy remake, like everything that makes up all the Mortal Kombat games, which I think was the original vision, and they just didn't have the memory, RAM, time, whatever it was. They couldn't do it. And so we would want to do that stuff if we could, and then we were given the time. So all that stuff.
Yeah. Be careful what you wish for, though, because like Warner Brothers hasn't put out a game without like a season pass in I don't know how long. It's been a long time. So a lot of those things like new editions and secrets, they might come to you if this was to happen from whomever, any dev, some DLC there. They might find a way to you know, make you pay a little something for it. But, I mean, I would do it. I would pay for it. But I'm already in the
bag. I mean, I think so. I think same here. Yeah. Like, I would totally do it. That isn't a question, but it's one of the things that I've been thinking about, incidentally, is the idea behind free-to-play and whether or not people... Like, I know Warner Brothers would be frothing at the mouth to make this a free-to-play game, like a Mortal Kombat live service, basically, where you take advantage of all that nostalgia that everybody has, and you sell the characters like skins in Fortnite. And I'm hearing myself say it makes me want to, my soul kind of cry a little bit, but it could be awesome. Yeah. It could be awesome. If we were the ones doing it, we would do it right. We would not have loot boxes. We'd probably be forced to nickel and dime the Mortal Kombat community. Sorry in advance about that. But
I mean, it wouldn't
that
be
being
us,
said,
yeah.
it would,
Guest
it would be us. It would
no.
be, they'd be standing over us with the axe or whatever. But that is, I think that's going to be part of, it has to be part of the pitch. Like, it has to be. Free to play, you know, you get a certain amount of characters that you get to play with, and there's an XP system and a season pass. And then there's the concept and talking about how cool would it be if this became a big deal? And this is something that really Mortal Kombat wants, you know, the Mortal Kombat fan base wants, where we have two streams of sort of Mortal Kombat. There's like the modern 3D games, and then there's this like nostalgic sort of secondary path where the game is like what picking up where it left off in 96. And like now you've got like, you know, we're not doing numbers anymore, but it's like Mortal Kombat Online or whatever it is. And from that, you just have, you start releasing like Aaron Black and like some of the newer characters in that style, that 2D style. And just like in my dreams, I'm like, Ed, so how do we do this? And he's like, oh, Joe, let me help you. Like in my dreams, that's how it works. But like in reality, like maybe we'd probably never talk to Ed while this was happening. But yeah, so... that's the my vision for it anyway.
There's the thing that my pipe dream for as far as like extras or something like that to add to it has always been the possibility of getting John Tobias to design some new skins, redesigns of his own skins from Mortal Kombat 1, 2, or 3, but with high definition in mind to take advantage of all of that now. A skin pack of that, of like new John Tobias skins for the characters would be amazing. I would love
people
to see
would
that.
Just it would yeah people would lose their minds. They would just lose their minds over that. Yeah, so that's the answer to that question. We want to do everything, we want to do all the things, but we gotta also be careful about what we promise until we get to a point where we can promise anything at all.
So I think you may have answered some of our questions coming up, but Alex GRT 5000 asks, will you guys be adding the stage fatality to the classic Pit 2 since it was missing in the original, and perhaps filling in any other notable omissions?
Every notable omission, in my opinion, should make an appearance. When that happens and how it happens, it's probably, like I said, that's the other advantage to free-to-play and doing it in bits and pieces, is that it actually... You know, if we're only offering certain amount of characters that you can unlock anyway, and some that are on the way, then it also takes a lot of production pressure off of us to do the best job that we possibly can. And yeah, like the Pit 2 fatality, making sure that every character, like that's one of the advantages. A lot of people have criticized. We read all the good and bad things that people say about the game, and it's especially brutal, and some of the people who are super passionate about Mortal Kombat have been extremely brutal because they love it so much, and they're like, this looks like shit, it looks like a mobile game, and like you know, and we've had sort of, we know we can do much better than what we have, but we're not funded yet. But once we get funded, and it's like I want to be like, it's going to be so much better. And I always try to say that, but like nobody listens or cares. So I think though, at the end of the day, one of the advantages of doing 3D characters is, oh, cool. One of the advantages of doing 3D characters is that you have the ability to do extra frames of animation, which will make it look less stilted and bad. And we can add in all those things like the pit fatalities. It just comes as part and parcel of like comes with the package, so to speak.
And I don't know about you guys, but one of the things that I always loved and one of the things that got me hooked big time in Mortal Kombat initially were the secrets and all that fun stuff.
Oh, totally. Games,
right? Yes.
So
that's everything.
There's no way that this game would come from us if it actually did get made where those things wouldn't be addressed and probably more. There would probably be a couple of new things in there, at least, just because we know how that feels. Like, we're Mortal Kombat fans, too. It's so much fun finding little things like that or stuff like that being hidden in the game. So, yeah, that would definitely be something that we would take advantage of.
And it acts as a form of advertising to the game. I mean, even in games that we were doing stuff for Lawless, the game that we will one day get to make. We were talking about some secrets and stuff like that and the merits of that. And, you know, there's always the publisher's always like, well, you know, secrets get figured out in 24 hours. It's like, yeah, that may be true, but it's also like that streamer that just like found the secret or showed it. That's like a form of advertising for your game. Like you got to have that in there today because people love kind of revealing that. You can make an entire episode of just that. You know what I mean?
So. And it's that thing where like if you do find something, it doesn't matter how long it takes though, but if you do find something weird, it immediately gives you the incentive, I wonder what else is here, and to keep looking around and try to find some stuff
there.
There's
gotta be more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. So yeah.
Same.
Bot Marley asks, is this based on the N64 or PlayStation version, or is it a combination of both?
Combination of both. Easiest answer I ever had. Honestly, it would make sense for us to not have a little bit of both in there because there are fans from one or the other. I know they actually play slightly differently. So when it comes to gameplay, we'd have to make a decision. We couldn't decide. We'd have to get into that and I'm not ready to get that deep into like play mechanics and talk about that stuff. That's more of a conversation we would have once we get into development, but in terms of like from a features abilities and stuff like that, what was in, you know, I think they, I'm trying to remember what it's called, like is it the Star Bridge was in the N64 version, and then they had Chameleon with a C or the K, and female Chameleon versus a male Chameleon. And so, like, we would just want to include all that, right?
And just as far as gameplay goes, like Cal said, who knows what how we would end up doing it, but Gabe and I, usually we were the ones talking about the gameplay and just passing around ideas and brainstorming, we all were. But Gabe and I really thought it would be a good idea to try making the game feel, as far as gameplay goes, feel and play a little closer to UMK3 as opposed to Trilogy, with its different versions. And gameplay wise, like UMK3 had a good, I don't want to talk about competitive fighting, but it did. It had a much better setting there, but still something a little more closer to playing like UMK3 than Trilogy, just with all the good stuff that's in Trilogy, like characters and stages and all that stuff too.
So clearly part of it would be modernizing the game too. So, you know, having your online modes and all that kind of thing too.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the things I want to mention while we're on that subject real quick is that when we originally approached Ed, he said, like, we're going to just, we recreated Mortal Kombat from this really genius method that Django came up with, 100% giving you the credit on this because it was your idea, where we would take video of the MAME ROM running in, and then we would overlay our HD sprites on it because we didn't have the source code. And it was just really funny because I remember in one of the meetings, I can't remember if it was the first time or the second time we pitched, he was like, well, we would just give you the code. And I was like, oh man, thank you. Like, finally, like that'd be amazing, right? But he said there were things in the game, like there were about 10 different things in the game. I think that's what he said, 10, that we would want to fix, like bugs that the original games have Mortal Kombat 1. And I think, I'm sure there are bugs that we would need to fix and address. The one that comes to mind is Reigns Infinite in Trilogy needs to get resolved. I'm sure there's other ones that if I think about it, or probably just look it up on YouTube.
There's plenty of little balancey things like that that could be addressed.
Yeah, we would have to fix some of that stuff. And a lot of people really, as much as people love MK Trilogy because it had all the characters and stuff in it, they love, I would say there's a bigger outcry of people that want it to play like UMK3. So that's where that kind of comes from. And like, I believe that we would probably find a sweet spot between that. And certainly in the future, there's no reason for us, once we have all the assets, to not make like a UMK3 pack or a Mortal Kombat 2 pack, where basically it converts the existing game to be like a 4K MK2. And you're going to pay for it because it's Warner Brothers, but you're going to pay for it. But yeah, you'd get your game finally. You'd get your remake.
I just had this weird vision of Ed Boon opening up a cleaner's closet and handing you like a giant box of floppy disks. Here you go. Sort through those.
I remember my reaction was like, wait, wasn't that built in assembly? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, well, we'll figure it out. Like, because I was like, oh shit, like Ed Boon's offering me source code. I better like keep my mouth shut and just take it and we'll figure it out. Figure it out later. Assembly is like really old.
Windows 98 machine.
yeah, exactly. He's like, let me spin up my Windows 98 machine. Be back in about a half hour. Yeah.
Just before we wrap up, Justin, you shared your screen briefly. Did you want to show us something that you're working on, or?
Well, I mean, that's the latest progress on the Soul Chamber. I've been working on it for the last 2 days, trying to figure things out. But no, that's just. I mean, if you want, I can share that again.
Yeah, maybe just a brief glimpse. While you're getting that up, I just wanted to ask the final question. So. And you sort of alluded to this earlier, but user Mugs Money asks, is the game structured like a 3-in-1, or can you, for example, choose any era of Scorpion? So like you mentioned, bringing back, you know, the classic Sonya, etc. But would you put like, say, MK1, 2, and 3 Scorpion, or just go MK1 and then, you know, MK3?
I think it would be all three. Like basically how the original game was, and I'm trying to remember now, but like, couldn't you, like, did you have to do a code or something to get Kung Lao MK2? I'm trying to remember.
I think you just press the select button from memory,
and then just like changes the character.
It's spun around or something, yeah,
right, or it spins around memory. and then you get the new one, like it does an explosion or whatever, and you turn. Yeah, we would do the same thing. It's just that you'd have a different button combination and you'd be able to get the look of Scorpion in MK2 or Scorpion in MK1. And of course they didn't run before, but that's again another huge advantage to us having 3D characters, is that we can make them do stuff that wasn't there before, right? And we can change the lighting, and especially with the power of Unreal Engine 5, like people have no idea. Like they have no idea how good it can look yet. Even now with the stuff you've seen,
it already looks good.
In order of magnitude better than what it looks like now.
And that's not even getting into stuff like the gameplay wise.
Getting into the game.
You could conceivably do things like, I want to play as not just appearances, but I want to play like Mortal Kombat 2 Kung Lao instead of UMK3 Kung Lao. And you can go up against somebody else who's playing a UMK3 Scorpion or something. And you could mix and match like that. Some other fighting games have done that, but those are some stretch ideas that we picked around that would be fun to do, if people would be interested, not just Warner Brothers, but other people too.
For sure.
Yeah. So Justin, you having any progress there trying to whip up the screen?
Oh yeah. Let me go ahead and get that for you.
Sounds good.
Yeah, this has been awesome. Thank you guys for having us.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this has been a complete honor to have you guys.
Definitely.
And that looks incredible, Justin. Like, that is so awesome.
That's really good.
Really, like, it feels just like the, like, yeah.
Thank you.
That's so great. Yeah, people are going to be in such a treat for this when it's when it's fully done, but it's really, you're getting all the wrinkles and stuff in the face, like right around the eyes, just looks really good. So keep up the good work, my friend.
Yes, fabulous.
Absolutely.
So before we end off here, tell us, Joe, where can people follow the project?
Yeah, I think Twitter is probably the best place. We're under the tag BBMKT. And so just look up that tag, BBMKT, and you'll be able to follow the project. I'm at Calactite, A-C, it's at, and then C-A-L-A-C-T-Y-T-E. You can follow me. I have like no I'm starting to get some followers, but I like nobody knows who I am. So make me feel good by following me. It would be, I think that I do post some stuff if you're into Facebook groups. There's like a handful of really popular Facebook groups that I will post images in. Like after I post stuff on Twitter, I go right to Facebook groups and I post to like 15 or 16 different groups. Each of them have like between, 40,000 on the low end to like 200,000-300,000 people involved in them. So there's it's always a great way to get exposure. And it's usually like, oh, hey, check out this new image and don't forget to sign up to the petition. So that's the best way to find me is Twitter and Facebook.
Excellent. So yes, as he said, don't forget to sign the petition, folks. And I just want to thank all of you guys for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we're really rooting for you guys.
Thank you.
All right, combatants, thank you so much for joining us today in this great episode. It's been nothing short of a privilege talking to these extraordinary gentlemen. Let's continue to show our love and support for this particular project. Let's get the word out, share the petition, and before we know it, perhaps our dreams really will come true. We appreciate everyone listening, and we're excited to hear from you. Be on alert, my friends, as our next episode is looking like it's going to be the Mortal Kombat Annihilation review. Expect a lot of good laughs and a stellar time. Other than this, we also have some other great guests booked, one particular from MK Conquest and one of the originals from the games. Who they are, you'll just have to wait and see. Much love, guys. As Chris stated, I hope you all had a wonderful holiday season and you've kicked off 2022 to a supreme start. Meanwhile, have fun, stay safe, and
stay flawless.